But the journey of your life lays a very nothing chance. Jeremiah 32. Fifth division. I consider it a privilege. Read about the Lord, and in the fifth place, there's something to live on. It's the first time I've been in this area. And I thank you for the invitation. And I'm looking to the Lord to direct that we might have a very profitable time together under His Word. I'm sure that the Spirit of God will lead us to this end. And I'm trusting that He'll make what we have to say, that is, little than myself, very practical and applicable. This is my desire, and I know it is. And this is why I enjoy the Word most when it's made practical. Now, in the 32nd chapter of Jeremiah, we have a rather interesting portion, short but interesting, and I'll read it in part. We'll begin with verse 1. The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the 10th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, which was the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. For then the king of Babylon's army besieged Jerusalem, and Jeremiah the prophet was shut up in the court of the prison, which was in the king of Judah's house. For Zedekiah, king of Judah, had shut him up, saying, "Wherefore dost thou prophesy and say, Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, shall not escape out of the hand of the Chaldeans, but shall surely be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, and shall speak with him mouth to mouth, and his eyes shall behold his eyes. And he shall lead Zedekiah to Babylon. And there shall he be until I visit him, saith the Lord. Though ye fight with the Chaldeans, ye shall not prosper." Alright, now, a strange thing happens with prophets. You say a prophet simply foretold what God was about to do because God happened to reveal this to him. It's God's desire to reveal this to him. But the thing that happened, the strange thing that happened with prophets was that the people who listened thought that the prophets determined what should happen, and thus prophesied, and then it happened. This is why the king of Israel, when Micaiah began to prophesy, or was asked to prophesy, said, "Prophesy something good." This man always prophesied evil, and what he thought in his mind was that the prophets came to indicate what was going to happen, and as a result of the prophets' own initiative, it would happen. And this is why Zedekiah, this is one of the reasons why Zedekiah goes Jeremiah to prison. He says, "This man speaks evil of me." He says, "Jerusalem's going to fall, and I'm going to be under the captivity of the king of Babylon, and I don't like this." And so he throws him to prison. Instead of realizing that it's not the man, but it's God behind the man who is speaking. And I always feel sorry for these prophets because all they did was tell what God had told them to tell people. But David were the ones that were blamed for. And so here's what we have then, that Zedekiah was our friend and our brother in the things of God, Jeremiah, and he said, now go on, if you will, verse 6. And Jeremiah said, "The word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Behold, Hananiah, the son of Shulam, thine uncle, shall come unto thee, saying, Buy thee my field, that is, and Anathoth, for the right of the redemption of thine life. And Hananiah, thine uncle's son, came to me in the court of the prison, according to the word of the Lord, and said of me, Buy my field, I pray thee, that is in Anathoth, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is thine, and the redemption is thine. Buy it for thyself. Then I knew that this was the word of the Lord, and I bought the field of Hananiah, my uncle's son, that was in Anathoth, and weighed him the money, even 17 shekels of silver." And the next thing that we see in this particular passage is that God reveals to Jeremiah something that's about to happen. And he tells him that this man is going to come to see him and offer him his field. Now, this is not unusual I remember one time I was sitting at my office. I'm an artist. I was an artist. I'm not doing much art right now, but I was an artist. And I was sitting in my office one day, and I got a telephone call from a man, a wealthy man. And he said, "I'd like to come up and see you." And so I hung up the phone, and the Lord said to me, well, I didn't hear any voices, nothing else. The Lord said to me, "He's going to offer you his printing business." The man came to my office a half an hour later, and he said, "Stuart," he said, "I'd like you to take over my printing business." Now God does this sometimes, and I can understand that. I can understand the Lord saying this to Jeremiah, not in an audible voice, but Jeremiah knew exactly what was going to happen because God chose to reveal it. Now apparently the thing that lay behind this was this, that his cousin decided if this land was going to be captured by the king of Assyria, that the best thing for him to do was get rid of his land and get the money and at least have be able to hold on to it, because if this foreign power took over the land, he would lose it all. So he went to his cousin, whom he assumed to be a rather feeble-minded businessman, I suppose. And he said, "I'd like to tell you this, that actually, if you're by right to purchase it before anyone else, would you be interested?" And of course, the Lord had anticipated this, and he said to Jeremiah, "Okay, he's going to come, you got it." So Jeremiah wasn't taken at all by surprise. The next thing I'd like you to say. Verse 10. "And I subscribed the evidence and sealed it and took witness and weighed him the money in the balances. And I took the evidence of the purchase, both of that which was sealed according to the law and custom, and it was opened. And I gave the evidence of the purchase unto Baruch, the son of Uriah, the son of Menasseh, in the sight of Hamadiel, my uncle's son, and in the presence of the witnesses that subscribed the book of the verses, before all the Jews that sat in the court of the church. And then he says, and I charged Baruch before them, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, take these evidences, this evidence of the purchase, both which is sealed, and the evidence which is open, and put them in an earthen vessel, that they may continue many days. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be purchased with him in this life." And so God promises him that there will be a future time in which this will be of great interest to him, and that he can purchase now and then have at a future day. Now I said I would like to make this very practical, and I'd like to apply this to us in this our day. The first thing we saw was that God had said that Jerusalem would be lost to the king, the foreign king. That the king of Babylon would take over this country that would belong to him. There would be no opposition to his conquering, that there would be an absolute victory as far as the king was concerned. The Jews would lose the battle, there was no hope. And Jeremiah believed it. Now, I think that we as Christians should be very, very concerned about God's attitude toward our world and our earth and our time. And I'd like to show you something that I feel applies so directly to us, that we can be like Jeremiah and have real vision as to what is about to take place and what is taking place. And in view of this fact, to act as Jeremiah did, under God's hand. Would you turn, please, to 2 Timothy 3. The first few verses. "Just know also that in the last day, perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boastful, proud, blasphemous, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truth breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, petty, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such anymore. Alright, now, I don't know what this says to you, but I'll tell you what it says to me. It lifts my eye to God. It makes me to see things as they are. It makes me, in a very real sense, despise this world and the course of its run. And to look for a country and a city whose builder and maker is God. It makes me to think in terms of laying up treasure in heaven. It makes me to lose affection for what is here. Now, I say this as a man who has a love for the United States. And I think that there is no man who is a man who doesn't have within his heart a stirring of patriotism for his own country. And I don't think that there is a man on the face of the earth who doesn't have some kind of ambition and goal. Some sort, if he's any sort of a man. And I don't think that there is any person who is a man who doesn't have an appreciation of what we have in the United States. But I have to say this, that God says that all this is going to be destroyed, that things are going to wax worse and worse, that humanity is not going to get better, or our conditions are getting better. 10 years ago, I said to our young people, you are saying the best of America. And I know they didn't realize it, but it would be best of America. And things are going down, and they're going to continue to go down, because of what God is now. Now, he's not saying, I make it to be this way. He said, I commit to be this way. And this is what I'm saying. I picked up a newspaper. I cut these articles out of here, there are 4 of them, I'm just going to touch on them, but I want you to see something. How applicable this is to this argument. It says here that men will be without natural affection, false abuses, truth breakers, excessive, despises of those that are good, there to be lawless and so forth. And listen to this. The prison population is a high standard. The state and federal prison population in the United States has reached a record of 282,258 as of January 1st, December 7th, an increase of 13% over the record of last year. This does not include city and county jails. Wake Forest happens to be the University of the Southern Baptist Affiliated School. Men's residents gave an invitation to 2 men to speak on detective behavior. One was Mr. Swift. Now, he published this magazine, The Huffer, the sequel to Playboy, or We, some of these other magazines. And he was sued because of obscene material in it. He was asked to speak, and he was named the Man of the Year, not any, but in fact, 350 students came out to hear. The next night, a minister was hired, and he was called the alumnus of the year. 50 people came out to hear. Doesn't make sense. Except that this happens to be the way it is. School vandalism. $50 million was spent last year, as a result of vandalism in the United States schools. That was more than one cent for the textbooks in some issues, and it was enough to hire 50,000 additional school teachers to spend on vandalism. 70,000 serious physical assault on teachers, and literally hundreds of thousands of assault on students perpetrated in our school's ambulance at this time. 58% of the year of 1970 to 1974. Were
during that time, there were 101,008.8 million meditators that said let's see, I don't have the question. A study of Kennedy was shown by the Kennedy and an organization of 400 million educators said the number of assaults increased 58% in the year 70 to 74. Sex offenses were 62% up. Drug related crimes 81%. And robberies 170%.
Now, I have more, but just get to the picture of what things are. And God says, this is the way things are, and He says, as it was in this day, of course, and we apply it this way. In the day of Jeremiah, God says to Jeremiah, this is what it's done today. God says, this is the way it is. And this is the way it is going to be increasing. Now, what does this do? That makes me say the Lord, Lord, control. It makes me say the Lord, Lord, I pray you with your control. Now, that you'll protect those who are dear to me. That you'll protect my people. But it also says this, that lifts my eyes from this world and I say, I don't want to build for them. I don't want to build for them. Now, the other thing that God speaks about is the deterioration of the church. And of course, that is in Revelation, the second chapter. And we know about it, or the third chapter, I should say. But just turn to 1 Timothy once again. We're right here at Timothy. Let's look at 1 Timothy. Let's see what he says from within the church. I say this simply to show what God is saying will happen as he did to Jeremiah in his day. The fourth chapter, 1 Timothy. Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meat which God has created to receive the thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth, and so forth. But the Spirit speaketh expressly, exactly, saying that this will be true, and if those who have had a profession of the faith, they shall depart from the faith, which indicates that from within there is this movement. Now go over, if you will, to the second Timothy in the third chapter, and notice what he says that will happen from without. Look at verse 13, just for one verse. But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived, and speaking about those who have a form of godliness and desire to follow them. And that's from without, there will be the attack. And certainly, Christianity, and I use it in its general sense, is deteriorating. And it's becoming to this sort of thing. And movements like the tongue movement, which are absolutely in opposition to what's gone, and healing as a practice, our propensity practice is contrary to what's gone, the exact word of God, and I fear not to say it, with the utmost boldness, within the church. And the center of gathering becomes the Holy Spirit and His work, theoretically, rather than Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and unto Him. Isn't that true? And in our day, we put ourselves in that layer between spirits where there's either one boiling spirit and heat, they're full, and lukewarmness, and we say, we don't want to be like that. But God is in fact the way it is, in general. So we look on like Jeremiah and we say, I hear what you're saying, Lord. I hear what you're saying, and I'm alert to it. And this is what we want to say. Now the next thing I'd like you to say is the fact that here this man, Jeremiah, comes to him and says, I want to buy out of it. If you're willing to buy my property, you know. And to me, this applies to the Christian in a very special way. I think that we can hear insight too. And if Jeremiah was alerted by God to purchase at that time for a future day, and yet Jeremiah never inherited this land in a real sense, because the captivity came in. And Jeremiah never saw through the captivity. But God said to him, look at Jeremiah, you purchased this for your time. Now I see two types of men in the world, and Christians. One of those is like Jesus, who loves his present evil world, and he purchases all his things for now. And I think of him as a Hamalian. He says, I'm going to get what I can and hold on to it, rather than trashing the thing that should be in his inheritance. And trust God in that. And this is a great push today, particularly for people in our day, because of the mammon, as they think, everything is what I can pick up, what I can lay hold of, what is material. And God says, I want you to search this under my direction. That's the path of peace. And just as Jeremiah was alerted to this, and Jeremiah never thought, but there's something for Jeremiah yet, I'm sure. Because God always does things like that. And he says, don't purchase from us. Don't buy up and see what we can obtain now, and that what we can hear now and say, this is mine, and be like this. And he says, what I want you to do is to listen to my words. And I want you to purchase those things that are real God. Now, I don't care what age we are. I sit very much with young people, of course, in our own family, because our own people are made up and they are the same. So I speak to them and I say to them, live for God now. And it doesn't matter what he talks to, live for God now. But you know, all this thing is 3/4 more true than all that. We're spoken of as the palm tree in Psalm 92, it says the basic things more true than all that. People. And the palm tree has that particular characteristic. But the older the palm tree is, and the thicker it is, there the more fruit it is. And God takes that up and uses it in the regard to his people. And there's no limitation to a person's age. As far as fruitfulness is concerned, because God will use us. But we have to purchase it. We have to think in terms of that. Look at Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, if you will. In the Psalms we read, by the truth, in Psalm 9, Ephesians pulls us into this our very day. And we can well apply this to ourselves. Look at verse 14, if you will, sorry. Wherefore he says, the Lord says, awake out of Satan and arise from among the dead, is the idea, because the person is Christian, he's not dead. He rises from among the dead, and Christ shall give thee life. See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the day is evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And just as Jeremiah can hear that voice somehow say to him, purchase this land. Take it and lay it up in the earthen vessel for days that are yet to come. Because it's not going to be years now, the very real time. But purchase it for those days to come. God says to him, arise from among the dead. Be wise. Redeem the time. Buy up the time. Purchase things that are eternal with your time. Devote yourself to it. And haunt you. And this is what the Lord is saying to us. And it costs us. And it doesn't matter what it costs us. We have to buy. Now, to be very, very practical, those of us who are elders, and I have to be an elder in my family, and I know what I say when I say this, that it is cost to be an elder. But that's more than anyone. It doesn't matter what we do, but it has to be cost. It is hindering in our mind. Now, I say that with now, because I know people can control it, I'm simply saying that it is a thing. If our business life hinders our soul, now, I'm a business man. I'm a business person. I know what I'm saying. I know what the best pressures of business are. But if we can do this, if we can say, Lord, I want for you, I don't want to be encumbered with the things of this life. I don't want the pressures for down here. I want to live for eternity. I want to buy for the future. Then we're reading. Now these are hard things for me to say, but everyone, I have to speak the truth. And this is the truth. And we have to test the vision that Jeremiah had and believe God and thus act. And our young people have to control themselves and their suffering. When the things of God are placed before them, they should then choose the things of God. If you make a B instead of an A in your school, okay, you made a B instead of an A, because you go to the top of the bottom and you travel along. And you might not acquire a great deal down here, but you're going to acquire a great deal up there. And this is the essential point. God has purchased it and has cost it something sometimes. Now I am fully aware of a balance, and I recognize this and I speak that. That to study in a university is just as much in the will of God as to sit down in the Bible and study. But each has its cost. Your business life is just as much in the will of God as you're reading the Bible and coming to the chapel. But each has its specific part. And God has it for a pattern of living in His local church, in the local church. And we should be devoted to that for the simple reason that we're part of the body. And literally, we are part of the body. This is not theoretical. If I am not at a meeting on a given night, part of that body is missing. And the rest of the saints suffer, regardless of whether I believe it or not. The saints suffer. Because we are a body. And so literally so, that if I am missing, part of the body is missing. And I don't believe I'm stressing that one way. God wants us to sense our responsibility to Him, and though it costs us, it costs us energy. We can put it on. Okay? Move out and do it. So a man says, I need this job tomorrow, and this one I can't have any reason. How is that? Doesn't matter. I turn to something far more valuable. So I don't study. God will give me time to study to the end that He wants me to achieve whatever He wants me to achieve. If I do as He will, it's a better thing to sound for. And then I can say, Lord, I'll do what You want now because it costs me, isn't it? I say, yes. This is the decision. And the whole thing adds up to this. You know what's going to happen? I believe. God is looking to a future date for Jeremiah. And He's looking to the morning because that's all He had to do with the people's children, Jeremiah. Come to you, huh? And somehow that purchase that Jeremiah made in that day, at the word of the Lord, is going to come back to him. And God will say to Jeremiah, you spent those shekels of gold, and you saw nothing but a buried in an old earthen vessel that was to have a footprint of the days to come, as I told you, didn't you? Jeremiah said, yeah, I was lost from it. I lost my father. And God said, oh no. Jeremiah, you have purchased that now. That's your possession.